This is Craig Brown, and welcome to Passages. Passages is a space to explore Bible passages used for preaching, reflection, and prayer. My hope is that Passages will shine a unique light on text used for preaching at the First Free Methodist Church of Seattle, or for anyone looking to dive deeper into the Bible. It's a joy to be back with you. I have been out on medical leave for a few weeks. I had a surgical procedure to remove a benign tumor from my pituitary gland. I will spare you the graphic details of the recovery, but I'm recording this podcast several weeks before it's actually going to be released to you, so you may hear a little bit of congestion and may not quite sound like myself, but I am feeling good and am excited about getting back to Passages and recording the podcast once again in support of the sermons that I preach on a weekly basis at the First Free Methodist Church in Seattle. But as I always say in the introduction, these podcasts are available to anybody. Although I'm linking the biblical text I'm doing the podcast on to the sermons I'm preaching, they could be an effective Bible study tool, even if you're not following our preaching at First Free Methodist Church. So I hope you find it useful and encouraging, and that the Lord is speaking to you in and through some of what you might hear each week as a part of Passages. With all that said, today's passage is John 17, verses 13 to 26, and it will be the basis of the sermon at First Free Methodist Church on my first Sunday back in the pulpit after being out on medical leave, which will be February 18, 2024. It's part of our new series we're beginning in Lent called Practice Makes Possible, as we discover how to encounter Jesus through holy actions. Let's hear first the passage of Scripture from the New American Standard Bible. This is its 2020 revision, beginning at John chapter 17, verse 13. We hear these words of Jesus himself. "But now I am coming to you, and these things I speak in the world so that they may have my joy made full in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I am not asking you to take them out of the world, but to keep them away from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. Just as you sent me into the world, I also sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself so that they themselves may be sanctified in truth. I'm not asking on behalf of these alone, but also for those who believe in me through their word, that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, and they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you sent me. The glory which you have given me, I have also given to them, so that they may be one, just as we are one. I in them, you in me, that they may be perfected in unity, so that the world may know that you sent me and you loved them just as you loved me. Father, I desire that they also, whom you have given me, be with me where I am, so that they may see my glory which you have given to me, for you loved me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, although the world has not known you, yet I have known you, and these have known that you sent me, and I have made your name known to them, and will make it known, so that the love with which you loved me may be in them and I in them." This is part of a prayer Jesus prays that's captured in John's gospel, and it reflects Jesus's farewell message. As we finish this prayer at the end of chapter 17, chapter 18 opens with Jesus being met in the garden of Gethsemane by Judas Iscariot, along with others who have then come to arrest him. And so these are really some of the final words of Jesus before he engages in his trial leading to his crucifixion. And they're powerful words, important words for us to hear. So this passage that I've just read is in the context of this larger prayer offered by Jesus. And this prayer is marked by relationships. Now, we're going to be exploring through this podcast today how these dimensions of relationships are really the key to the church's mission, our unity, and our unity with Jesus. Notice how the text begins in verse 13. We kind of begin this reading mid-prayer by Jesus. He says, "I am coming to you." Of course, he's referring to himself, but the "you" here is God the Father. Jesus is saying is that I'm coming to you, Father. So he knows that his death is imminent. It's a direct statement by Jesus recognizing that this reality is going to bring him to the Father. So we learn here a little bit about why Jesus is praying. And it says, so that they may have his joy made full. It says in verse 13, these things I speak in the world that they may have my joy made full in themselves. So we learn here why Jesus is praying. But take note, he's speaking of his joy. You see, there's even joy for Jesus in facing death because it is this that is going to bring him to the Father. So at issue with joy is not the process. It's, in other words, it's not how we get somewhere, but rather joy is focused on the outcome regardless of the process. So what I mean is that Jesus is fixated on being with the Father. And so that vision of being with the Father, that outcome gives him joy even in the process that will take him there. He wants his disciples to experience that very same thing, joy, even in difficulty, since they know the outcome. John's gospel was written decades, of course, after Jesus' death and his resurrection, and so the Christian community had already endured a number of different persecutions, not only by religious authorities, but also by Roman authorities. So this message that Jesus has for them about how they move through the world when there's a hostility, if you will, by the world toward them is an important one. So he addresses the hardships and circumstances that his disciples are going to face and why joy is so important. It says in verse 14 that they have the word of Jesus. I have given them your word. Now, when we read John's gospel, it can become very complicated for us because every time we see the word, we can get confused about its meaning. So every time it says word, we assume either the word of Jesus or the word of the Bible. So it says in verse 14, I have given them your word. And oftentimes we assume that means the Bible, but the word that John uses there in Greek is not the word for the written word, which is rhema. He uses the word that he's been using throughout the gospel, which is logos. And it's a significant differentiation that Jesus himself is the word of God. And the Bible tells us everything about that word. So when we talk about this word in verse 14, he's saying that the word that the Father has given him, he has spoken forth. He has embodied it in the world, and the world has hated him through it. So this word then makes them focused on the same outcome as Jesus, which is to have oneness with the Father. In other words, that Jesus is saying that I've done everything you've told me to do, that you and I are one. And so Jesus' prayer is that his disciples will have the same thing happen to them. It's the focus on the outcome of being united in relationship with the Father that makes the disciples hated by the world. Hated, the way Jesus describes it, is because this value of embracing the outcome of knowing God, being in fellowship with God, being in fellowship with Jesus, is it forms a deviant set of values. And by deviant, I don't mean wrong. I mean just different from the values by which the world lives in. The world, for the most part, is addicted to its process, not its outcome. And Jesus is inviting the disciples to worry about the outcome, and whatever the process is to get there is what the process is. In the world, but not of it, then, is not about location. So when Jesus is talking about his disciples are in the world, but not of the world, this is exactly the idea here, that they're focused on the outcome of their life and work with Jesus, not on the process of getting there. It's about being present in mind, heart, and spirit. So his prayer, as we move to verse 15 and 16, is that the disciples or his followers would be like him, not of the world, like he is not of the world. And so the deception here, preserving them from the evil one, is to get the focus off of the outcome, but get the focus on the perspective, that process. That's the temptation, is to be bound up in the moment. How do I feel in this moment? What's happening to me in this moment? Rather than looking at the outcome, where is this overall journey leading and taking me? And this is how there's joy versus not joy. As long as this perspective is before us of the outcome, things begin to shift and change. And that's really a key passageway for us. Prayer for the presence of God's future makes us God's presence in this world. The founder of the Methodist movement is an Anglican preacher by the name of John Wesley. And John Wesley is attributed with saying on his deathbed that the best of all, God is with us. You see, that's that outcome orientation. It's that perspective of looking at the all of life, not just the moment of life we're in. And this orientation on perfect relationship with God and one another drives us toward a set of values and behaviors. We live differently because we're focused on this outcome of true fellowship with the Lord. So being not of this world does not mean being separate or aloof from it. It actually means the exact opposite. We focus on relating to God and being in relationship with God in this life. And so that means that we're not particularly, as Christians, given to the ideas of popularity or celebrity or wealth or any of these things. We are people who make every decision with joy because we know the outcome of our life. Jesus goes on in verses 17 to 19 and talks a little bit more specifically about his mission and how we share in that mission. The mission for Jesus that we have is this word sanctification. And that word sanctification has its root in the meaning of the word holy. The truth of God is our focus on this relationship, and with God as the target of that holiness. So this truth of who God is, who Jesus is, and their perfect relationship between them and us sanctifies us. In other words, it makes us holy. So when it says sanctify them in the truth and that your word is truth, remember that word for word doesn't mean the Bible, that means Jesus. Sanctify them in the truth, your word, Jesus. In other words, Jesus as the communication of God is the truth. And so it's this being grounded in Jesus, being grounded in the relationship with Jesus and with God is that which sanctifies us. And we'll learn in a minute that we don't do that alone. We do that in community with people. This isn't a one-on-one with Jesus only. This has to do with context and community. Jesus goes on in verse 18. He says, just as you sent me into the world, so I also send them into the world. This is a strong statement of commissioning. That word for send is apostello. It's the word we get apostle from. It means to be sent with a commission. So in the same way that God sent Jesus, so now Jesus says, I'm sending them in the same way. So to be sanctified then means that we live in this world more and more like a people oriented to Jesus, which is what we talked about just a few moments ago. And this mission is about being sanctified together. Look at how Jesus speaks of this reality in verse 19. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself so that they themselves may also be sanctified in truth. Notice how he doesn't talk in the singular. He talks in the plural. This is about community and about being sanctified together. Something happens when we engage in this process together. And that opens a key passageway for us here. Prayer for the sanctifying grace of God makes us more and more a part of Jesus's mission. Oftentimes we think that there's work to do for God, places to go for God, a vocation to follow for God. And these are all true experiences, but they cannot be the focus more than the foundational experience, which is the focus on our sanctification. So if we're focused on deepening our relationship with God through Jesus Christ, if we're driving deeper into that space, it's then going to naturally form the work we do, the places we go, and the vocation we follow. So instead of being focused on the how of our life, we need to be focused on the who of our life. For example, if we can't experience sanctification in our driving or taking out the trash or in our workplace or in our marriage, what makes us think that we're going to do more sanctified work on some great adventure or some particular calling or vocation? If we can't get the small things working in our life as in a sanctified perspective of God, how do we expect to get the big things to work? The idea here is not that God is taking us anywhere. We simply must be taken up by Jesus. That's the sanctifying process. So no matter where we are or what we're doing, the mission is to be sanctified in the presence of Jesus wherever we happen to be. Jesus really now gets into language that oftentimes we gloss over because it seems repetitive and a bit cryptic to us in verses 20 to 23, where Jesus is talking about the unity in relationships. And the easiest way I can explain how we might look at this text is to simply hold it in little bite-sized pieces, just to be careful and slow as we read through it. Because this unity in relationships is part of the sanctifying process. It's important because Jesus now in verse 20 turns his perspective to future followers of his who will exist because of the work of the disciples. So he says, like, for example, in verse 20, the glory which you have given me, I also have given them so that they may be one just as we are one. So Jesus is now elaborating on the work that his followers will do and ultimately his followers will do. Now, there's a vision here, and this vision of the future of Jesus' followers really falls on us today as being the link in the chain holding this movement of Jesus going forward. So in all of these overlapping statements as we start out, we begin to read in verse 20 that Jesus is not asking for these alone, but those who believe in me through their word, that they may be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you. So in other words, Jesus wants a sense of unity amongst us that's the same as the kind of unity that Jesus and the Father share together. And then it says in verse 21, so that, or that they also may be in us. So it's the unity that we have together in the same way that Jesus and the Father have unity that gives us unity with God. And that has a purpose. There's a reason why that exists. So that the world may believe you, the Father, sent me, Jesus. This is helpful to us because what it helps us begin to understand is that our chief witness in the world is a sense of unity and relationship together with God in the same way that Jesus is in relationship with God. So Jesus continues and he says, the glory which you've given me, I've also given to them so that they may be one just as we are one. It follows the same pattern. And then Jesus goes on, I in them, you in me, that they may be perfected, or that word for perfected in Greek also means complete, in unity, so that the world may know that you sent me. You see how that repeats itself back in verse 21, so that the world may know that you sent me. And then there it is again in verse 23, so that the world may know that you sent me and that you loved them just as you loved me. Such a powerful teaching that we oftentimes overlook, that there's this way in which we think that Jesus is describing some sort of kind of utopian way of existence that's foreign to us. No. He's praying that we might have a sense of unity together as a body so that we might represent in the world a way of being together as he is, Jesus, with the Father. What a peculiar witness would that be in the world to have a community of people that existed in a way that reflects the same way that God the Father and Jesus coexist with each other and that we're empowered by the Holy Spirit to do so. That's a key passageway for us. That a prayer for unity is a prayer for relationships and community, not agreement. Now, somehow, we've been deceived by the polarized world we live in, that unity must mean agreement, so that unity has to do with ideology. It has to do with politics. It has to do with positions. Jesus' prayer for his followers is about unity, not because they agree, not because they have the same ideology, not because they have the same political views, but because of their relationships with each other. Do we believe in Jesus because he agrees with the Father, or because he is in perfect relationship with the Father? This is the key. Unity among us as followers of Jesus is built on relationships with God and Jesus. Without those relationships, we are a divided people. And so finally, we explore those relationships in just a little more detail. Verses 24, 25, and 26. So then the mission that Jesus is sending on us now becomes a little bit clearer. Jesus' desire is for all those who believe to be focused on his glory, not on location, but on relationships. So wherever we are, we're focused on his glory. Verse 24, Father, I desire that they also, whom you have given me, be with me where I am, so they may see my glory, which you have given me, for you loved me from the foundation of the world. The love of the Father for Jesus before the foundation of the world is the mission. It's about relationships. And then verse 25, it uses this word known quite a bit, beginning there in verse 25. It says, righteous Father, although the world has not known you, yet I have known you, and these have known that you sent me, these being the followers of Jesus, and I have made your name known to them, and I will make it known, so that the love with which you loved me may be in them and I in them. So this idea of being known is not about knowledge. It's not about bits of information. Being known is about relationship again. The world doesn't know, Jesus says in verse 25, know the Father, but Jesus says, I know you, and my followers, they know you. And then he goes on to say, the love you loved me with is in them and I in them. Do you see how this kind of repetitive language helps us begin to understand that there's this interwoven relationship that we share with Jesus by the power of the Holy Spirit that reflects the relationship that Jesus has with God? We cannot lose fact of the fact that this is about relationships, so that the dance of love and relationship here forms the very foundation of our mission. So that means our work then is not to persuade or convince people. When we're encountering non-believers, our work isn't to try to twist their arm or to get them to believe. The focus of our lives is on deeper relationships with God and one another. And that then gives us a peculiar sort of proclamation. So it's not about winning the mind only. It's about winning the heart. It's about winning affection. It's about the love with God and the love of God with others. And that takes us to the final key passageway. The prayer for our mission begins with knowing love and sharing love. Now, that love is not disembodied. That love is expressed perfectly in Jesus Christ. So we can't talk about the power of love without talking about the power of God's love expressed in Jesus. You know, people today are starved for community and context. What they're not starved for is a cool worship service. What they're starved for is community and context. And so when worship is good, for example, it's an expression of our love for God, our love for one another. And if there is no love, then, for example, when we do something like worship, it's a dead event. It's like a ceremony. It's going through the motions. So consider the activity of any church. Oftentimes, if you pick up a church's budget or you look at what matters to a church, you see worship at the very center of it. I know today, even in my own church, this is true. And so it should, when there is love and community. When there is a sense of connectedness, a sense of oneness, a sense of being in relationship deeply with God and one another, if those don't exist, then the worship is just a ceremony. Our mission, the very reason we exist in this world, is to experience the love of God and each other so that our lives will bear witness to the greatness of God. It's exactly what Jesus said, so that the world may believe you sent me. If you have comments, reflections, I invite you to visit my website, revcraig.com, and click on News in the upper right-hand corner in the drop-down menu that says Podcast, then click on this week's episode and leave a comment. I also invite you to visit our church's website, ffmc.org, if you want to learn more about Free Methodism and our great history that begins back in the 1860s with B.T. Roberts and others that led a Free Methodist movement that would have pews that were free, that was abolitionist to its core, something I'm so proud of as a Free Methodist. You can learn all about that on our website, and you can learn how to connect, more importantly, with our community, even from a distance. For now, I bid you all grace. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.